Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. And I'm delighted to have on with me today one of our Heritage Party councillors, Sean Turner. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Hello, David. Thank you for inviting me again. It's wonderful to be back here.
It's really good to have you on. And you were elected unopposed about 2 years ago, coming up to 2 years ago, in your home village of Kent. And you've been a parish councillor there, and you're very outspoken. You're doing a lot of work in trying to represent what people want and what we would want as common sense restored in our country. But can you tell us a little bit about what it's like to be a parish councillor and what kind of things that you come up against and you have to deal with?
Well, as I've mentioned in videos before, I was on with you last year, and that was great. And again, it's just building experience. But the reason why I went on to the parish council, I was co-opted onto the parish council over 2 years ago, is because I felt like I couldn't do anything. And there's all this media and all these issues globally, but I was thinking about more focusing locally, because it feels like you can do something there, and you can. And it isn't all negative. There's some positive things. That there's initiatives that I'm involved with an art project at the moment for the kids in the schools. And it's also a learning process, because what I seem to pick up on is, especially with your guest you had on yesterday, is it Liliana, was her name?
Leilani, yeah.
Yeah, Leilani. She was talking about politics and learning about politics. And I think it's this big word that people are sort of scared of, and you have to have a certain way of doing things. But it's everyday life, isn't it? But it's obviously authority based, and it's within governance. So the reason why I went on really was to learn the system and build my confidence. And that seems to be working so far. So it's a gradual process, but it's sort of pushed me on to now start questioning the next authority up, the local district council.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You've been doing that because you're on a parish council, which is the most local level. They often get overlooked, parish and town councils, but they are important for very, very local facilities like parks and toilets and, like you say, arts projects. And you can do all kinds of wonderful things there. But I know you've been challenging, is it Maidstone Borough Council? And you went in to challenge their climate alarmism. They're all signed up to this climate nonsense. And you've given me a video to show.
Just before you do, I'm sorry to jump in there, but as a prerequisite to this, there's kind of three things I'm trying to focus on. And this is what I want to question them on, because I think these are the things that pushing the agenda along. So it's climate, housing and devolution.
The Local Government Act 1999, Representation of the People Act 1983 and the Climate Change Act 2008 all set clear legal obligations that this council appears to be violating. Question: can you confirm with the latest documented evidence whether this council acknowledges these obligations, including reasons why they have been repeatedly ignored?
Councillor Jeffrey.
It sounds like the same as the first question. Those allegations are untrue and unfounded. So I won't be answering that question in detail. You're wrong.
Wow. That was so condescending from the person there. Is that the leader of the council?
Yeah, so he's the leader of the council. It's a Green and Liberal Democrat coalition now, but he is the leader, yeah. And there's all sorts of interesting initiatives coming through at the minute, which I'm sure we can get into. But, I mean, the council needs to justify with evidence any emergency, any initiative, or anything that's going to be funded with public money. So all I was doing was going in there and saying, hey, why, how, and where is the information to support this? That's all I'm asking for.
Right, and they should give an answer, shouldn't they? Because they're spending money on the basis of a climate emergency. I mean, everyone who watches the show knows that there isn't a climate emergency. They just declare these things without any evidence, and then they spend loads of money and do lots of things, which are pretty destructive to local communities. And then you're just going in and questioning that, and then they got very, very defensive, didn't they? Like, yeah. they must know that they're doing something wrong.
Yeah, so what I've actually done is to continue on there is to follow, because the whole point of questioning them is to put them on a public show, really, and that's why I always follow up with a video. It's a real shame that there isn't more of the public there to support us, but slowly there's some people that come with me that night, and slowly people will come the more and more that I do it. And to put them on public watch first, but then I've followed that up with a letter afterwards. Because I'm still not happy with the answer.
Yeah.
So I want the justification because, you know, that's what democracy is, isn't it?
Absolutely. You should be able to put them on the spot. But after that, I think you sent another video clip, which we'll just play now, of a Labour councillor. And they got really, they really got the hump with you after you'd left, and they started laying into you and the Heritage Party for asking the question, didn't they? I'm just going to play this now.
Just so sorry, just before you play it then, just to get again to set it up. It's a good thing that I now know that they know who I am. Because I didn't go in there under the banner that's above me here.
Right.
I just went in as a resident. So if you play it, then obviously explain.
We've all got our story to tell. I think we need to remember we're here also to do the work for the people who elected us. And I did take umbrage from the gentleman from the Heritage Party who was here earlier. Actually, we were elected by the people. If only so many percent bothered to vote, that really isn't our problem. That's down to them. But we were elected, all of us, from all parties, by local people to deliver a local service. Thank you.
Wow. So she's got the hump with you, being from the Heritage Party, but then also saying that if people don't vote for them, because there's always a very low turnout in local councils, well, it's not their problem. They're essentially just going to do what they do anyway.
Yeah. Well, to some extent, she's got a point that we do need a bigger turnout, and that's kind of why I'm here, to encourage people to engage. But I don't know, maybe they get their friends to vote for them, I'm not sure, but it is the same old faces all the time. So, yeah.
It's so important, and this is something that I mentioned, you mentioned, and other people I know, you know, we know, like Madeline, who's a Heritage Party General Secretary, who say all the time, please get involved in local government, because if there's only a turnout of 30 or 40%, which is what there usually is, the 60% and 70% of people who don't vote can't then turn around and complain about what they're getting, because by abstaining, by not voting, you are essentially giving consent to the winners. And if you need, we need to get rid of this uniparty. That was a Labour person. You showed the Green person before. The Lib Dems and the Conservatives are the same. They're all gung-ho for this climate agenda, the woke agenda, the migration agenda. If we want that to stop, we've got to vote in our people and boot them out. You say, she has got a point there.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's like we're in a card game, aren't we? That's the way I bring the analogy out. My kids have started learning how to play cards recently, and we're in a card game, and we're being dealt a hand that we're not playing with, you see. We're just accepting the hand and losing.
Yeah, it's a numbers game as well, isn't it? Because they've got a certain number of people. We've got more people. We've got greater numbers. And I know some people are engaged and are getting involved. And I thank everyone who joins us in the Heritage Party and who stands to be a candidate. It's fantastic. But we need 100 or 1,000 times more people to get involved. Otherwise, we're just going to keep on getting the same old, same old. And, you know, another thing there's the woke agenda. And you sent me another video, and I thought this was quite shocking, but really, you know, ridiculous. That there's a guy here, you know, denigrating men. I'm just going to play this and I'll ask you to comment on it afterwards. Here we go.
I'm quite conscious that the cabinet is largely male, and I want to say that it is men that are the problem. And as men, we absolutely need to do everything in our power to up our game and to take responsibility, as we pointed out by I think all of you this evening. So thank you.
What on earth was he talking about, saying men are the problem? That doesn't make any sense to me at all.
I have learned since that over the other side of the chamber that night, there was a video camera there from a local TV station or newspaper. So I think there's a bit of a show going on, to be honest. But the reason why that was all raised, to give you the background information, some councillors raised a very valid point about violence against women and girls within the borough. Mm. And they're trying to get an initiative to go together to support women and girls. So I've got a daughter, a beautiful wife, a mother, nieces, cousins, you know, so I've got lots of females within my family. So, of course, we need to protect everyone, but we do need to protect vulnerable women in society. But the bit that they miss is like, what about protected spaces for women? So, you know, what about the trans ideology of using women's toilets? What about trans communities within women's sports? I mean, that's been awful. You know, some of the poor women have been beaten up and all sorts of things in boxing I saw before. So it's kind of like it suits their narrative to divide us. And I guess this is a whole part of this oppressor. You talk about this quite a lot, don't you? The whole oppressor.
Cultural thinking, oppressor. Victim narratives.
That's what I picked up on it with. And the Green and Liberal Democrats, they seem to always be within that social division structure. They're always pushing for this wacky stuff. And
they're always saying men are bad, women are good. And there's just an absolute divide for them. Whereas, of course, there are some men are bad. There are some women who are bad, and most men are good, and most women are good. But then they play this game, and like you say, it's virtue signaling. Maybe it's virtue signaling for the cameras, but then they virtue signal about protecting women and girls from violence. But then they go and do the exact opposite by promoting the transgender agenda, and also, of course, you know, immigration, mass immigration. And you know, I'm not against all migrants coming to the country if they're here to start a business or they're here with a scarce skill, you know, that we don't have, or that's another issue. But there are some people who are coming in with criminal intent, and they wouldn't do anything to stop them either.
Yeah, I mean, what that actually led on to is the whole point of that proposal is the cabinet have signed it off because they want to create citizens' assemblies. So we're moving into a different point now in democracy where what I see is that all of our democracy is being removed slowly. So we're probably going to continue into the devolution project in a bit, I guess. But they've actually passed that they're going to spend £100,000 for the next budget year, £50,000 per citizens' assembly.
Wow.
£40,000 of that, so 80% of that £50,000 is on consultancy fees. The first subject is going to be violence against women and girls. They want to invite in women and girls with lived experience. And I think it's an important thing. It's a very important thing to do. But as long as it's dealt with the global issue, you know, grooming gangs, for some reason, councils don't want to talk about them.
Right. And that's really what we need to deal with to
protect
women and girls from violence.
Of course it is. So the next Citizens Assembly after that is going to be one on walking and cycling within the borough.
Right. Travel. That's another
active big travel, which is
project.
Is a big green thing. They've already spent £25,000 this year creating a proposal to create maps for cycling, but that all got binned and the consultancy walks off with the money again, you know. But it's... Wow. Just on the consultancy point, my big bugbear with it is And we will get into citizens' assemblies and what they're really about. But some of the consultancy projects they do, where they invite people in for sessions, the county council do this as well. They're all pre-organized. Generally, most of the people there aren't actually residents. They're either consultancy agents or council agents. And a friend of mine that went to one recently, she said that one of the people that was there to speak came from Devon with lived experience. And I thought, well, why don't you just invite people from the area, you know, teas and coffees or whatever, or why don't we just get the council to decide? Like, that's what they're elected for. The whole thing about citizens' assemblies is it's meant to be going to the people, but they seem like they're selected communities that are already set up to give the answers that they're looking for.
It seems like these are a bit of a smokescreen where they are presenting them as, oh, look, we're talking to the citizens, everyone can come and have their say. But actually, the opposite is the truth, because if you're an ordinary person from the locality, you don't get a platform, but then they bring in their own people and they're there to advance the agenda. Would that be, you know, how you see them operating?
Yeah, but also it's also removing democracy, isn't it? So if you look at the way the devolution rollout is coming through, I believe we had some success over Christmas with that, because we've managed to save the county elections here, which we'll probably talk about soon. Unfortunately, 9 counties in Britain haven't. You know, they've lost their elections. It's this slow, gradual process of removing democracy. So if you take an election away, you're taking people's rights away to vote for who they want. If you're installing citizens' assemblies, then if the consultancy firm that are being paid to do it are creating the assembly, it's not actually people that, it's not actually the public, is it?
Yeah, no, it's everyone should have access to this. I mean, at least in an election, everyone has the chance to vote for someone. If someone abdicates their responsibility to vote, well, you know, they get what they deserve, but everyone does have the chance. And yeah, you're right. We did push back, I think it was in the Heritage Party particularly, by writing letters to councils, county councillors, district councillors, MPs. We got some elections to go ahead, and they were going to cancel elections in Kent and in Devon as well. They were two places they were going to do it. And in your elections are going ahead, which is a great success, I think, for us here.
Yeah, I did spend quite a bit of time over Christmas writing lots and lots of emails. But, I mean, luckily, our General Secretary, Madeline, put me in touch with the whole devolution rollout. And I've been looking at it for the last 2 years. And once you actually see it, you can't unsee it. It's everywhere.
It's a huge thing, but people, it's done by stealth, and it sounds so dry that most people don't engage with it, because they hear the word devolution and they think, oh, that doesn't matter, you know. War's more important, or grooming gangs are more important. They are important, but this devolution really is an important thing that's fundamentally going to change the whole structure of society across the whole of England. Really is a beast, isn't it?
So Angela Rayner, just to speak her words, not that I'm going to promote her or anything, but she has said she wants to take power from the Whitehall to the Town Hall. That's her strap line. And it's not just power, it's funding as well. All the funding will come from the sort of public central purse down to local authorities. But as that process happens, all the NGOs get brought in. As you can hear, the citizens' assemblies are coming in as well. So it just removes the public from the equation. And then they throw in the big metro mayor in the top that makes the biggest, you know, the last decision. Yeah. And when I get chatting to people, I mean, lots of people say that Sadiq Khan's done good things for London, but most people say he hasn't. And I always say, well, you go and speak to a Londoner, you go and speak to a taxi driver, you know, you go and speak to someone that lives and works in London. I'm not sure they will agree with you.
I think the people who are in NGOs who are making a lot of money out of consultancy fees, for them it's nice, but for all the ordinary people, it's a disaster. And yeah, and this is the thing, you know, you say Angela Rayner there saying we're going to give power from Whitehall to the town hall. That's an absolute lie, because she's putting in, as you say, these regional mayors over the top of whatever districts and boroughs are left and town halls are left. And you're going to have one person with all the power in Kent, or one person with all the power in Leicestershire or Cumbria, whatever, like Sadiq Khan in London, like Andy Burnham in Manchester. And people don't know very much. You know, a lot of people have no idea this is going on. And even if they do, they don't understand the implications of this. But, you know, we really need to fight against this, I think, because this is going to be a disaster. And they're going to use this to push this mass housing development plan. She wants 1.5 million homes built all over the Greenbelt and the countryside in the next, which she says 5 years, but there's only 4 years left now. So that's going to be a disaster for a county like Kent, as in other places where you've got lots of lovely farmland and a lot of it's going to be concreted over.
Well, there's a few issues within that, isn't there? I mean, one is obviously the environment, as you've said. So not just housing, but they're putting solar farms everywhere now, or proposing to, or applying to. You know, that's going to be on lovely agricultural land, arable land that can be used. It's going to be covered with solar panels, which is based on essentially a lie that we're saving the planet by doing it, you know, but we're damaging the environment and people. The thing with the housing is what I asked this question before when I come on, and we kind of got through it a little bit, but who are the houses for? I think this is the big question, isn't it? Because if I'm going to the council and asking them, the district council, the borough council, remember, is the housing authority, they should have the numbers on the housing need. But I've asked them that, and they haven't. So it's all done on census, they call it. But where do the numbers come from to build so many? I think that's the point. And, you know, jumping back into the climate thing as well, with all the EPC regulations that are coming in for renting and for everybody, it'll be, I reckon, by 2030. If your house isn't sustainable enough, then I don't know. Are they going to knock it down? Are they going to take it away from you? Are they going to put you into one of the new ones? And then the other question that comes off the top of this is the brand is always changing. So it's now the district council is calling it quality, affordable homes for all. Affordable quality homes for all. That's the new branding.
What a mouthful.
So who is the all, though? And what is affordable? And what is quality? I mean, are we talking about a shoebox? Or we talk? I don't know. Like, there's no definition. I think that's going to be my next step, is to find out what this definition is. Because it's easy just to stand up and spout off lots of numbers. But what does it actually mean?
Yeah, when I was on the London Assembly, they had affordable homes. They used to talk about that all the time. But what an affordable home was something that was 80% of the market price. So it really wasn't affordable for any normal person, because if a normal market price for a flat is 500,000, an affordable home apparently is £400,000. And then they made up this new phrase called a genuinely affordable home, which was like only 30% of the market price. But there was none of them ever available, because they just didn't exist. So the whole thing, sorry, I laugh, but the thing is, it's so ridiculous, the things that they keep coming up with to try to justify what they're doing. They just talk rubbish all the time, honestly. But you were looking into this migration thing. I'm just going to put, what's this one here? You sent me a couple of documents to look at. The government goes further and faster on planning reform in bid for growth. So, yeah, this is their plan to...
So over the Christmas period as well, if you remember rightly, there was the Climate and Nature Bill, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Which was a horrifying piece of legislation. And your video was great on it, because you explained the bit they went into about all the Mother Earth, do you remember, and all the... which was all a bit strange. And I believe that was connected to this because that has been shelved now to July. But the next one that's coming up that we've got to prepare ourselves for is the planning and infrastructure bill.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So I think that's a prerequisite, that slide there to what's coming. And I think that's all part of, yeah, planning reform and a bid for growth. So I can't remember what her words are now. That might come back up later if I've got it in my notes somewhere. But it was talking about Angela Rayner again, looking at her videos. She's talking about, you know, empowering local communities with growth, building houses, you know, and everything becoming local. But when you actually tear the wording apart, I will find it in a minute at some point.
Yeah.
It looks like it's just about creating 15-minute cities as well. I know I'd go back into the conspiracy thing, but like it isn't a conspiracy because these communities are being created, but they just keep changing the names. And I think this is all part of the same thing.
If they really want growth, then they need to get out of the way of businesses, particularly small and medium-sized businesses, and stop loading them up with extra taxes. That's actually going to suppress growth. All these business rates going up, extra taxes on employers for national insurance, and all the inheritance tax, which they're putting on farms and businesses. These are going to really destroy the backbone of the economy. But then they talk about a plan for growth, which is all government spending, taxing, borrowing and spending money on things that essentially people don't want. It's green things, which aren't green, by the way. They're not trees. If we want to cut down carbon dioxide, we should plant some trees, not cut down trees and put up wind turbines and solar panels. And, you know, you're speaking into this, you know, which is great in Kent. There's something else you sent to me here. You know, going back a little bit to migration and spending. This was a thing, I don't know if everyone can see this, but on here, apparently, Kent County Council has spent £11 million on immigration over the last year. Is that something right there?
That was for the last 5 years, that was. But initiatives, because of the way we had to do the questioning, the initiatives are split up. But what I'll probably try and do is if I can focus people onto the bit at the bottom there, where you've got the yearly figures of actually the data's been separated. So it's a little bit easier to work out. But what that's for is I've got the paper here, actually. So unaccompanied asylum-seeking children, it's called UASC support. The total UASC grant received was, now them totals there over 5 years equate to 153 million.
Oh, wow.
So these are grants that the council would have been requesting from local government to house and support asylum seeking children. Gosh. Now, I haven't followed up with the extra FOI because it's only just come through, but. What they don't do is they don't, because a lot of, you know, it's a bit challenging, isn't it, talking about immigration and asylum seekers, because if they are actually coming from war-torn places, we have to be a little bit compassionate. But one thing they don't do is they don't check the age.
Yeah.
So are they children? I think that's the question. Because if they rip up their paperwork, I hear a lot about that. And are they actually children or are they a little bit older than children? We don't know, do we?
You do question if a lot of the people that they say are children, you know, they are 18 plus, but some of them that are 16 and 17. They're perfectly able to look after themselves and they come on a long, long journey as, you know, older children, if you like, teenagers, with a lot of money. And as you question, well, you know, we can talk about compassion, and that's great. And I have compassion on, you know, the younger children who really, you know, obviously can't come to this country on their own, 7 or 8 year old kids. But when there's someone, it's like a big 17 year old boy, and they've come from Syria or Iran on their own. Well, you do question, you know, are they a genuine refugee or not? I know. The thing is with this, there's such a huge amount of money, and I guess Kent being right in the front line, because Kent is home to Dover and Folkestone and the places where people try to come across the English Channel. There's a real specific issue with this in Kent more than many other counties, I would imagine.
And it, yourself, you mentioned the NGOs, so the non-governmental organisations. They are just awash with this stuff. And I'm going to mention them because there's three of them that come off the back of this freedom information. So there's a big housing, social housing company called Clarion, and they're part of this. They're taking the grant money for this. There's one called Migrant Help, and there's another one called Rethink. And I mean, these have all got X accounts. It's a very commercial. It looks very commercial to me. And I think this is the thing we've got to realise. It's the same with the housing, isn't it? There's big housing companies behind all of this.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can't stop people from making money and creating business. It's a good thing in some ways. But when the council is funding it and supporting it, and also because they're part of the planning authority, they're allowing it. You know, there's even been local housing developments here where officers have spoken up and tried to overrule the public in opposing it. There's an agenda at play.
This is what I object to. Is like, I'm not against people making money. That's a good thing if they're running a business which is good and it's sustainable in a genuine way. But it's when they need massive amounts of subsidies and taxpayers have to pay for businesses which would otherwise fail if they didn't have these subsidies. And what I think what's happening in America at the moment is fantastic with Doge. You know, they're like cutting funding from all of these government projects, and people are finding out that these things are unsustainable, that are just held up by government subsidies to do nothing good in particular. They're just all melting away. You know, these things, they couldn't survive on their own in the free market. I think we need that here in this country as well.
Well, it's priority as well, isn't it? So you'll always get from the county council, for example, that there's not enough money for this, there's not enough money for that. And how do we prioritise within politics? How do we prioritise within social structures? When they seem to be prioritising on climate agendas and the sexual education that's going into schools, is that the priority? Or should we be looking after people through other priorities? There's one there for you there. So the good place to start with this really is to probably come back. And the way I've been trying to make it clear in my head is where is this coming from? I think this is the point. Where is this coming from? So if you look at a UNESCO, which is the sort of an arm of the United Nations, they've set out CSE for the planet, comprehensive sexual education. And then our government, and I'm sure all other governments around the world, have adopted that. And then they're bringing that down into councils. But a lot of this stuff, like looking at that slide there in front of you, is non-statutory guidance. So there's no statute to back it up. There's no law to back this up. This is just influence, really. And okay, they could say it's guidance, and it needs to be within the curriculum, because, you know, at my kids' school, there's another one there, climate. This is climate. So there you go. It says it there, climate action. I mean, the United Nations, their goal 13 is climate action. So it's actually in the same header. So our governments have been heavily influenced by globalism, and the United Nations are an unelected NGO, essentially. They're just a big one, aren't they?
Yeah, indeed. And they're pushing all of these things into schools, whether it's sustainability, which is essentially climate alarmism, or the green agenda, and the sexualization of children going in through comprehensive sexuality education. Here's another thing I think you said about Ken.
Yeah, I'd like to focus on this one because this is part of the campaign for running the elections, and this was a real eye-opener. Now, this is called a circular economy. Now, I think this has been removed from their website because I've been shouting a bit about it and making videos about it. And I'm just going to have it in front of me just to take you through a few points.
It looks very complicated, actually.
It does look very complicated. So just if I can make it clear, because I think people really need to understand this. Now, that Green councillor, again, at the district, he keeps talking about circular economies, or he calls them donut economics, they call it. So what it's made up of, if you look in the centre circle there, if people can see there, you've got all the council departments, really. So you've got one there called the education people. That's the curriculum part. You've got laser energy there. So they're the people that provide all the energy to the schools. But then on the outer part of this, if you look at the top left-hand corner, you've got reports and data. So at the bottom there, it says World Economic Forum.
Oh.
So, I mean, it's very small. You can see it there. But hold on. Aren't these the guys that work out of Davos and fly over 1,000 private jets to Davos? One of them I read, one of the flights was, they flew under 21 kilometers flying to the event.
I should take a bicycle.
How dare you talk about carbon emissions, you know, and I'm not even agreeing that carbon is bad for the planet because we need it to grow fruit and veg, but how dare you know, the hypocrisy is just off the scale. Now the other one that's on there is the IPCC, so this is a direct connection to your local council. This is global to local. What else have we got on there? Framework.
These NGOs are involved in trying to influence the policies of local councils.
Yeah, that's right. So if we work around the circle, we could go to programs and awards, which is at the top right there. It's kind of like 1 o'clock. There's a campaign group there called Let's Go Zero. They heavily influence the local council. Now, I've got to thank your friend Tina Brooker that put me in touch with this because she was at Gravesham Borough Council questioning them on climate. And on the same night, luckily I watched all the video on the playback, a behavioural change officer. I mean,
that doesn't sound very good.
They're not hiding anything, are they?
No.
A behavioural change officer did a talk there and explain to people what the initiative is here. And it's about behavioural change within schools. So they're trying to influence schools, but they're doing it with activists. Let's Go Zero is an activist group. And they say they're a free group and they offer a free service, but we know they're getting grants from central government. Nothing's free.
Yeah, well, maybe it's free to the council, but then they're getting their money from somewhere else. So taxpayers are paying for them somehow because these NGOs get massive amounts of grants, either from local councils or from national government in Westminster. And yeah, this is what really annoys me, that all of this money that they get, if they had to raise money for themselves on the free market, like a company wanting to start a business, they wouldn't get anything from the people. And they're kept afloat just without people understanding that they're there. And then they want to essentially, this one sounds like they want to manipulate children and get them to do things and behave in a way which their parents probably wouldn't want or don't even know about, you know, how they're being manipulated.
Well, I'm glad you brought. I'm sorry to stay on this because I think it's really important, but I'm glad you said that about behavioural change between the child and the parent, because that is a Marxist trait, definitely. And like splitting up the family, we've got it here, haven't we? Freedom, family, and nation.
Yeah.
bottom right, there's food, healthy lifestyles. Now, one of them that's on there is fair trade. Now, we see these stickers on our bananas in every supermarket.
Mm.
And originally, I think it was set up as a good cause to create ethical standards within supply chains so that farmers that are growing the bananas get a good price for them, et cetera, et cetera. But they've totally shifted their focus from that into climate ideology. And then, you know, I questioned it, and it wasn't too bad in the end, but I did question the school because we had a survey that come home about fair trade. And it was as if, like, you know, you're out shopping with your child and your child sees the sticker and says, well, mum or dad, why aren't you buying the fair trade one? You know, and okay, hopefully that extra 20p per banana does go to help farmers. But once I started looking into it, it's not as clean as that. Now moving round, what have we got here? Another one. Frameworks. So we've got the Department for Education in there. And then the direct link has got United Nations Sustainable Development Goals.
Wow.
It's there. So, you know, I'm sorry to get so energetic about this, but this is global to local. This is it. It's in your face. It's here now.
The thing is, I think, you know, a lot of people will be screaming at their screens here and understanding that this is, they're seeing this. This is what's happening. This is how this agenda is being pushed on us. But then a lot of people will be so frustrated because they don't know what to do to fight against it. And but you are really doing that now in terms of you being a parish councillor, but also you questioning the larger councils, and then but you're also going to stand for council as well, and that is a way to push back against it.
Well, we've got a hustings coming up in April. I'm going to stand in the county council elections, Kent county council elections, and luckily we've got two other candidates that are interested in the area and doing it as well, which they've agreed with you already, which is good. So
yeah,
this is about, as well as trying to get votes, of course, this is about trying to bring awareness to people. Is that noisy in the background? I've just heard a lawnmower.
No, it's absolutely fine. Yeah.
So how can we get this information out to people? We do it through the election process. We do it through the campaigning on it. My three points that I've picked, as much as I'll talk about the schools, the three campaign points that I've picked, really just taking the global to local on. So we've got the term that you've used before, and I've heard it quite a lot, and it's in your face, really. But again, people don't understand what it is. ESG, environmental and social governance. So the environmental is the climate bit. The social bit is the dividing people and the gender ideology. You know, BLM, whatever the latest one is that's separating people. And the governance is you being governed by the authority in accepting it.
Yeah.
And business have to accept it. Residents have to accept it. And that ESG is coming from the top. It's coming global. It's a global thing.
Yeah, they're almost trying to circumvent democracy by people in these globalist organizations like the World Economic Forum and the United Nations and others that are less well known, the Rockefeller Institute, the Trilateral Commission, the Club of Rome. You can go on and on and on. But all of these people, they actually believe that they've got the right to tell everyone what to do. But do you think, and I do think this, but do you think that we can actually stand up and say, no, I'm not going to accept what you want, and I'm not going to do what you want, and I'm going to assert and reestablish real freedom and real democracy in our nations?
Well, I'm really glad you've asked that question. That's a brilliant question, because this is the whole issue, isn't it? Now, what was the film that was made recently? Is it Richard Jeffs?
Oh, yeah, Stakeholder Capitalism.
Yeah. So he's explained to people how this is being rolled out globally. And ESG is all part of that, the whole Davos club. The issue is you can get as annoyed as you want at watching the videos, but what can we do about it? This is the question. I believe we influence people locally and send it back up the chain. And the reason why I know that works is because, again, I spent so much time over Christmas writing emails about opposing devolution. The main reason for opposing devolution over Christmas is because they were going to take the election away.
Yes.
So we have to, I would class that as a quite a small, medium-sized win, I would say.
Mm.
Because it shows you that with a little bit of tenacity and trying to hit them, they're concerned about their public image, aren't they, the local councillors? Mm. And they don't really know about this stuff. And if you steam in with the stuff about Davos, they just don't want to hear it. But if you talk to them in their language and you show them pictures like this circular economy, I mean, you know, the UN and the World Economic Forum are on there. So, you know, I think you have to send a message back up the chain. I think that's the way to do it.
The thing is also with this, I think some of the councillors just acted in a manner which is entirely selfish. And the district councils realise, well, they're all going to be abolished. So they might have been in favour of this devolution plan initially, but when they realised they're all going to lose their positions and they're going to just merge everything into these super councils, and the super councils themselves are not going to have much power because there's going to be a metro mayor or a regional mayor with all the power, then they, just out of self-interest, turned against the plans. Do you think that's a part of it as well?
There's probably a little bit of that, but the reason why our local district council, again, the brand changing, it was devolution was the buzzword, and now it's called local government reorganisation. So they're going ahead with stuff anyway, but I think we've managed to stop a little bit of it.
Yeah.
But we need more people on board to keep that momentum going.
Mm.
You know, and you're right. I mean, I wrote to each councillor individually, and maybe they did change their vote. Or maybe they did think, wow, I better think about my future here, because it's probably quite a cushy job for a lot of councillors that are on district and county councils. Okay, they get a small premium for doing what they do, but it's probably enough to keep them going as a part-time job. And then there's probably all the connections that come with it. I won't get into that now.
No, I think if you're on both, if people don't realise this, so there's quite a lot of people who are on both. They're county councillors and district councillors, and maybe a parish councillor as well. And you can rack up about 20 grand in the joint, the stipends for those three things. So it never used to be that much, but now it's like, you know, half a salary for some people. So
it's a way of protecting, isn't it? Because there's always this blame culture that, oh, it's the district that do that, and it's the county that do that. But they all work together. It's all. So if you look at the documents I sent you one last night from the LGA, it's all connected. It's all local governance. And that's why it's really good at the parish level, because I can access all of that just by being on a parish. People think that you're just looking after the vicar's lawn or whatever. But no, you get access to all the information. You know, you get the emails and... It's public anyway, but I wouldn't usually see it. So, yeah.
It's really invaluable because you're on the inside, and then so things come to you, they just fall in your lap. Whereas if you're like on the outside, you have to dig and send FOI requests, and you don't know where to look at. So the more people that we can have as having a position, an official position, even as a parish councillor or a town councillor, the better, because then we can fight against it from the inside. And, you know, like I said before, this is a numbers game. So if you're watching and you're so frustrated with what's happening in government and all the things that are going wrong, which, you know, a lot of them are deliberate, get involved. And this is the time to do it, because the elections this year are on the 1st of May. The applications to be a candidate, you have to fill in the forms and give them into a council. They're called the nomination forms. They have to be in by the 2nd of April. So this is really prime month for making a decision to get involved and to stand to be a councillor. If you leave it beyond the 2nd of April, it's too late. Now, I often have people come to me, you know, halfway through April and says, oh, can I stand to be a councillor? How do I do it? And I said, well, it's too late. You have to get your forms in by the 2nd of April. So that's really the deadline you've really got to, you know, get them in a week before to be safe. So this is the time to do it. So please, if you're watching, come and join us. Stand to be a counsellor. You know, even if you're what we call a paper candidate, and you don't want to, you know, actively campaign, you at least give people a chance to vote for someone who is not pushing the climate agenda and the woke agenda and the sexualization of children and the trans agenda and the mass immigration and the solar panels and the wind turbines and the mass development on Greenbelt land. I could go on and on and on about all the destructive things that are going on. But we need our people in there on the side of the people to actually be there and be able to make the decisions to stop it. Otherwise, you're just going to carry on getting what you've got. And nothing's going to change. So, you know, Sean, thank you so much for all the information you've given us, so much information, which is really, really valuable for people who want to know the nuts and bolts of what's going on. Just to finish off, tell us about a little bit about your campaign and what you're doing. You mentioned the three things you're going to be on your leaflet. I think you're talking about education, you're talking about the development, and you're talking about the governance. And so just tell us a little bit about how you're going to campaign over the next couple of months.
Well, again, I think you're right about being organized. The reason why that I fought so hard Christmas is because I wanted the election to happen. And as you say about a paper candidate, even if you want to be a paper candidate, it's great experience and it allows you to put leaflets through people's doors. You know, and thanks to you, I mean, you look at a normal leaflet from one of the Uniparty, I mean, they're very just telling you what you want to hear. And you know, there is important things, I know, like potholes to deal with, but when you've got this kind of stuff we're talking about, people need to hear this stuff. It's, you know, let's not tell people what they want to hear. Let's tell people what they don't want to hear, because they're not going to learn otherwise. That's why I showed you the Circular Economies Board, because they need to know that this is in your vicinity and this is happening. Sorry to just come off of the campaign, but one thing I did send you last night, if we don't do this, this is what's coming. 1.5 million announced for left behind neighbourhoods. Now, you've covered this before. You covered the town boards thing before. They've changed the name to neighbourhood boards. And they've included another 20 towns, which I think is part of the devolution. And what they're they're trying to bring in, instead of replacing councillors with unelected boards. And these unelected boards, I think they've said before, they'll have, I could never pronounce it, philanthropists.
Philanthropists.
Yeah, I'll never get that word out. and there's a local police officer. And so people that already got positions, like the Metro Mayor, they've already got positions. So it's just removing democracy, and they're going to be, it's going to be an authoritarian future if we don't do anything about it.
These are dreadful. Again, there's another thing that was announced in the last government under the fake Conservatives, and these town boards, and they would be there to change and regenerate rundown towns. But they're completely undemocratic. It's like, you know, if you want to be on the council, you can put yourself forward for election and stand. And, you know, everyone in theory has an equal chance. Obviously, it's not really like that, but in theory it is. But the town boards, like you and I, we can't apply to be on the town boards. I mean, how do you get on them? Well, I know how it is. It's the leader of the council decides who's going to be on that. So they pick their mates. They will pick, you know, like you say, a philanthropist, which will be the head of a climate NGO, probably. Maybe a local businessman or woman, someone from the local lodge, I imagine, you know. And people, the process is so opaque. But then they set themselves up and they get all this money. They get £20 million apiece and they can do what they like with it. And it's completely unaccountable. It's absolutely shocking. It's Yeah, it's deplorable.
So just to finish up, the campaign will be prioritising schools and education, definitely, and letting parents be aware of what's coming into the classroom, because this is really concerning. You've seen what the climate stuff is there. There you go. I've missed that already. But the wellbeing and schools bill is definitely based around that. Now, I've just got a few points. Are we okay for time?
Yeah, that's fine.
Let's keep going. So a few points I took out of the children's wellbeing and schools bill. At the moment, it's in its third committee stage, I think. I think it's the one before it comes to the houses of, which one is it?
The Commons, I think, is
going the Commons. Yeah, yeah.
And then it goes so to the after.
One of the points, again, it's all sold as a benefit, but state control register. So they're talking within this bill about tagging children.
Wow.
I.e. giving them an identification code.
You mean tagging them like a dog, you mean?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because that is animals are vulnerable as well, aren't they? I mean,
but well, yes. I wouldn't be surprised if that's where they want to go, you know, with all
the it seems to be all the vulnerable people in society get picked on, doesn't it? It seems that way. But the way it's being sold is that your child won't be able to run out of school and or be nabbed by a kidnapper or whatever. This is Keir Starmer's sort of sale on it. But it's digital ID.
Yeah.
You know, they tried to bring it in.
Sean, I'm just going to put this in here because I know when I was at school, there were no massive, you know, iron fences and gates. You know, you could just walk in and out. But I noticed around 2015, 2016, every school in the country started to get these big iron fences all the way around the perimeter and these like prison style gates that you need a code to go in and out. That never used to be the case 10 years ago, but now every single school, you know, it's got like prison fencing around it. This is a real change I've noticed that not many people actually speak about.
Well, the irony is because I went in to see the head and the deputy head this week, and I did have a very good meeting. So I think it's probably a good time to bring this up. Talking about trying to do something locally, you can't go in heavy. You can't go in heavy because they just don't listen. You've got to go and explain it. Now, they didn't know, the head didn't know about the wellbeing of schools bill. And she's probably busy enough not to know, I understand. But this is a really important thing to look at. And I think she was thankful that we brought it up. So, yes, security. The big buzzword is safeguarding, isn't it? Now, there's ways of looking at that, because are you safeguarding a child by telling them that the planet's going to burn? Are we safeguarding a child by telling them it's okay to have 70 plus genders?
Yeah.
You know, so we have to think about what is the safeguarding about? Is it to imprison them? It's the health and safety chaos, isn't it, really? Like this is part of the modern future, it seems. But just getting back to the tagging, when we was in lockdown, I remember all of the kids were given a Google identification code, and it was about learning. You have to have a code to sign in. But a lot of us that kind of knew what was going on was thinking, hold on a minute, like that seems to me like you're being given a number. And if we think about this long term, how a digital ID will work is everything will be recorded. So all of their exam results, all of the attendance, which we haven't talked about yet. That's another thing, attendance, because that was a big thing last year. Still is with a lot of parents. This is going to stay with them for their life. So when they go for a job interview, whoever's interviewing them will be able to tap into their digital ID and check. So is this social credit scoring the start of it within this bill? I guess it is.
They try to bring these things in by stealth, don't they, without people realising, and they put them... This bill is hundreds of pages long and hundreds of sections long, so they put something in, you know, page 257 or whatever, and you're like, you don't realise until you actually, you know, you're looking and joining the dots.
Well, I've just tried to pick out a few there, but just jumping back to the attendance. Now, in 2023 in Kent schools, 10,549 penalty notices were issued.
Wow.
Now, that equates to £455,000 of income through fining to the council. And there's kind of like a... is set up so that they don't have to tell you what they're spending the money on within their legal system. So when we, you know, surely that money should be ploughed back into the school system.
Right. You know?
So moving on from there, if we stay with the finance, Breakfast Club. Oh, well, what have we got there? Oh, well, we've got Kent County Council Finance. Well, there you go. See, you jumped there. Mm. To Ken, you can see the figures there. Is that 787 million?
That's that's the debt that Kent accrued in 1 year, I think.
So if we just jump back to earlier on in the interview, if you remember me saying, they took a grant to house children, they say, asylum seeker children, at 153 million.
Wow.
Have we... It's hard to say is that a priority, but it goes in one way and comes out the other, doesn't it? So they say they haven't got any money, but is it?
These figures are absolutely extraordinary. I mean, I can't imagine why they're getting into so much debt. I mean, 787 million just for one county. I mean, we talk about the government having a massive debt, with the government's debt there, the national government's debt is 122 billion, but Kent's debt is nearly 1 billion. So they have got a county debt as well as a national debt, which must be going up, you know, so much every year. And then you've got all the districts. They're listed there, not all of them. Some of them seem to have no debt, but a lot of them seem to have accrued lots of debt over just 1 year. I mean, people are now talking about councils going bankrupt, and you know, they're all it's the whole system's falling apart because they're not funded properly, or they have to spend money on migration or sustainability, whatever. But these figures, and I didn't know that it was that bad at local council level. It just looks like, you know, they're going to fall into a black hole, a real black hole. Not
the other part of this as well is, I mean, that's taken from a BBC publication. That's the debt. I wondered why we were seeing it. Why do they need to show you that? And again, I think it comes back to devolution, doesn't it? Councils haven't got enough money. We need to bail them out. So we need to hand them more money from the central government.
Yeah. Or they could say, oh, well, now we need to merge them and do this because the old system is like,
to make them more sustainable, you see.
Yeah. So it looks like, yeah, the classic problem, reaction, solution.
Of course. All of that is within this. Now, one other point that I was just going to come back to with the Wellbeing and Schools Bill, a Breakfast Club provision. Now, I brought this up with the head the other morning, and she looked at her deputy, and their faces were just their mouths on the floor, because they were like, how are we going to organize that and fund it? A Breakfast Club provision. And when I was sitting there talking to them, I just said, look, you've got to see the long term game here, what this is really about. Now, We talked earlier on about quality affordable homes. How about quality affordable energy? How about quality affordable water? How about quality affordable food? You know, the reason why parents are rushing off out the door at 7 a.m. is because they might have two jobs to keep the house going. So they have to then send their kid into school at 8 a.m. for a breakfast club, when they could be sitting around the table having breakfast as a family. It's so sad, because the child needs that in the morning. They need that time with their family. They don't want to be, well, they're not strangers, but who really wants to go to a breakfast club?
I know. You know, I mean,
it's, yeah. So it's been sold. So Keir Starmer is like, oh, it's because kids can't afford to eat and they're not getting a good breakfast and it's not setting them up for the day, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, well, stop taxing their parents then.
Yeah.
So I think I'll probably leave it there. I think I've just brought the main points up there. But oh, the other one was, sorry, and I know that your touch on this is uniform. So they're talking about removing branded uniform. And again, the benefit is sold to you as we're saving you money so you can go to a certain place and buy the uniform. Now, when I spoke to the head the other day, they said, she said that only one piece of branded uniform is what we require. Mm. And again, looking behind me with here, you have to have some kind of emblem to be a part of something.
Mm.
You know, so if you remove that, you're just, you know, the schools put in proficiency for secondhand uniforms and stuff, and that's just part of being that community, really. Mm. So
personally, I think, you know, there's no absolute right or wrong on uniforms, but I think it's a cultural thing. You know, in the UK we have uniforms. If you go to countries in the continent like Germany and France, they don't have uniforms. It's just, you know, historical and cultural differences. So, you know, but that's the culture of the country, you know, our country at the moment. It's just, you know, it's how it is. I personally don't have any, you know, strong opinions one way or the other. So, you know, that's, I think there's far worse things in the schools and well-being bill.
Yeah, of course.
Particularly, targeting home education.
Yeah. Well, so that was one more point. That the point that's in there is called suitable education regulations.
Mm.
And that's for home and in school, of course it is. So they're the local authority are going to be checking up on home education to make sure that the education is regulated.
Yeah. But yeah,
the question again is what is suitable education?
Yeah. I know it's up to now there's been no problem at all. Anyone can home educate their children and the government has just like left everyone alone. It's like, well, that's our culture again. We don't have a school compulsion to send your kids to school. Like in Germany, again, they have a Schulpflicht, which is compulsory schooling. You have to send your children to school. You're not allowed to home educate your kids. But in this country, we've always had home education being allowed, and all of a sudden they're introducing so many regulations to make it almost impossible to carry on home educating your children as you want. They've got to be assessed and visited on a regular basis, and the register is not just to say, oh no, this is the name of the child being home educated. You have to say what tutors they're getting, what activities they're doing on this day and that day and the other day, what trips they went on. It's like such a huge hurdle of compliance that you have to meet that it's going to be really, really hard to actually give the councils all the information that you are going to be required to give them. It's absolutely horrendous.
Well, just to finish up with a stat on that, in Kent, figures show a 31% increase in children here have been taken out of traditional schooling over the last 5 years. Mm. So, you know, parents have probably had enough of what their children are being taught. Yeah. I know there's the whole lockdown thing to take into consideration, but this government don't want home educators getting away with stuff. No. So they want the authoritarian system to be covering everyone.
Mm.
So it's probably a good place to leave it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you're doing a great job, Sean, in speaking out against this and in, you know, being a councillor and in standing to be a county councillor as well. So I wish you all the best. And I hope that you win and you can keep on fighting the system. So really good to have you on the show. Thanks for joining me, Sean.
Thank you.